Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski. This episode of EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vonta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vonta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vonta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get a special offer of $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Martin Schilling, Managing Director at Techstars Deep Tech Berlin Accelerator, author of the book The Builder's Guide to the Tech Galaxy, 99 Practices to Scale Startups into Unicorn Companies, former COO of the FinTech N26, where he scaled operations from 100 full-time employees to 900 full-time employees and scaled up an international team for 25 markets. And the organizer of Deep Tech Momentum, the number one European bootcamp for deep tech founders. Welcome to the show, Martin. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Hi, Martin. Thanks for having me.
So, Martin, let's dive right into it. You've set a goal for Europe to build 750 more unicorn companies in the next decade. What challenges do you foresee in achieving this? And you know, what's the first step in making that reality? And how does maybe what you do fit into this vision?
Yeah, hey, look, I'm deeply passionate about the European deep tech ecosystem, okay? Mm-hmm. So, of course, we need to build more unicorns, in particular more deep tech unicorns. Yeah. But what I do believe is that we need to turn Europe into the leading European and leading globally deep tech ecosystem of the world. Uh-huh. Yeah, so essentially, deep tech solves the big questions of our time. For example, why did the Ukrainian army had to rely on the mood of a US billionaire when they asked for satellite support? Yeah, so this degree of reliance on non-European technology is increasingly dangerous. And I would love us all to do something about it. So essentially building companies, deep tech companies, and as well, of course, unicorns, kind of company that really got big and scale, yeah, that, for example, fight cancer or launch a new space economy or building the next novel AI layer. Yeah. These kind of companies will really matter in the future. So I do believe it's not anymore about delivering gear to our doorsteps in 10 minutes, right, but about building the next deep tech scale-ups.
Sounds amazing. Martin, before we dive into deep tech and investing in founders, let's talk a bit about N26. Scaling N26 to 900 employees sounds super impressive. What's the toughest lesson you learned about leadership during that growth spurt?
Yeah, hey, look. So first, I started at N26 when we had 300 employees and I left when we had 1,500, a bit more than 2 years later. Yeah. This was a super impressive scale-up story. My own team had then, depending how you count, 700 to 900 employees. Mm-hmm. This was really, really building a massive rocket ship in a very short time. I enjoyed it a lot. I've written a book on this journey, and essentially the toughest leadership lessons I learned, I would say, are three things. First, North Star matters more than you think. So it's really, really critical if you wake up your executive team in the middle of the night, mm-hmm, that everybody can exactly state the same North Star. Yeah, this degree of alignment on your leaders is so critical. It's not so easy in startups because you evolve, you change direction, you need to pivot. But ensuring that the team is aligned all the time on your North Star is really, really critical. That's what we learned there. That's one thing. Two, you cannot stress enough that you need to fly with a AAA leadership team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hiring and retaining AAA, in particular leaders, in particular in the early stages, is so critical. Yeah. So this AAA hiring and retaining AAA leaders. And then finally, if you scale, functional excellence starts to matter more than you think. So it is helpful to have generalists at the beginning and then through the scale-up phase who essentially are the early stage pirates who can dig deep into topics, whatever you give them. But you would need to hire as well operational and functional experts, marketing experts, operations experts, product tech. So people who have built scale-ups before.
Martin, so speaking about the lessons learned, what was your most expensive fuck up and how it shaped how you build and scale ventures today?
Yeah, hey, look, my most expensive fuck ups were all around hiring. Yeah. So one story, we had a time at N26 where it was really difficult to reach our customer service. Yeah. The reason was product market fit. It's like there is a big rock rolling down the hill and we just couldn't keep up. Yeah? We're just running behind the rock. So that would mean customers have waited for more than half an hour on phone lines or days for emails, which is totally non-acceptable for a bank, of course. In that moment, we massively needed to step up the hiring as well, the leadership of the operations team. And we've built up a long pipeline of potential leaders, then did many, many interviews, then hired one. But as soon as this person started, red flags keep emerging. So my team said, hey, look, I'm not sure if this person will really get into the groove here. I did not see the business impact happening super fast. Couple of red flags, but I didn't act on it. So because I was emotionally committed to this hire, so I invested a lot of time, I pitched the candidate internally, and I did not act on it enough. Then probation period passed, we kind of dragged on, and after literally around 12 to 15 months, we then decided to let this person go. This was the person who then sued us in court after this, who did not deliver on the business we needed. So if we had taken probation period more seriously, or I had kind of in the weeks after hiring be more critical, of course, in a coaching mindset, I would always do this very transparently. Look, this is not working. Here are the three things what I'm observing. How can I support you? Of course, this with a coaching mindset, that would have been a game changer, but I was emotionally too committed. So not acting on leader low performers, that's probably one of the biggest mistakes I made.
Got it. It's hard, especially when you're emotionally committed.
You know, you've invested so much time, then in a situation, and that's the critical thing, in a scale up, when fires are burning, that's by the way another mistake. I have too often tried to extinguish fires myself. So there is a big problem in particular scale-ups of companies that found product market fit. Suddenly many fires start burning and you have the natural tendency just to go and extinguish the fires. While in general, this is of course a good idea, it's in these situations often helpful to invest some of the time to hire fire women and men to extinguish the fire rather than extinguish the fires yourself. So the advice would be let fires burn and hire fire women and men to extinguish the fires first. Probably another mistake there.
Martin, so you you said that you wrote a book, you know, using also the lessons that you've learned while scaling N26. So out of the 99 practices in your book, which three practices do you believe every startup founder should prioritize to accelerate growth?
Yeah, hey, look, there are 99 practices. It gets a bit too granular, I would say, if we don't choose three, but I would choose three areas where you really need to be on top. So first, find your North Star. Okay, so again, not easy, far easier said than done. Being clear, crystal clear on your North Star. This will not be possible all the time because you're pivoting, you're evolving, but essentially, very tactically, to do several retreats a year, 2 to 3 retreats with your leadership team, and then refine together the North Star is really critical. When we talk about North Star, I mean, what's the value proposition you're having to your customers? What's the category you want to lead? What's the purpose? How will you have changed the world in 10 years' time? These kind of questions, to be super clear, what's the top three company key results? That's kind of being clear in your North Star. That's one element. The second is hire and retain your AAA leadership team, as just said. So really invest in executive hiring. This means requiring inspiring job descriptions, really going to your network to get people working with you, that is connected as well to build up some degree of personal brand that people really want to work with you. So that's the second area. And the third area is always have enough money on the bank. Master the fundraising game. Yeah, so in particular, if you need venture capital, thinking about this early enough, 6 months, the shortest runway you should have, or it's latest point where you should start fundraising. So, and really ensure that that's one key responsibility as founder, ensure you have always money on the bank.
Got it. Sounds good. Martin, speaking about fundraising, you evaluate tons of startups, you know, before they enter the program at Techstars. When evaluating founders, what are the, or startups, what are the top qualities you look for? And how do you spot potential category leaders? So what would be, you know, kind of a checklist for pre-seed founders when approaching investors?
Yeah, hey, look, we did a couple of surveys and we did some recently in Q2 2024, a couple of internal investment correlation analysis. Maybe that's interesting to the readers here. It's published on my LinkedIn profile. And so very first, very important to recognize 10 investors in the room, 12 opinions. Okay, there is no one size fits all criteria list, no one size fits all checklist. I just do this 10 thing and you get investments. So a couple of things which we recognized. We did a survey around 50 B2B SaaS and deep tech investors on the investment criteria. And the top five things are the following, what they said. So first, the speed of execution. So being able to execute fast and showing this in the investment process is one thing. It's not so easy to assess as an investor, of course. This is why many investors tell you, I do invest not in dots, but in lines. I want to interact with founders multiple times, ideally over many months, and see progress. So one cue in that's what we look in our investment process is the hours you need to reply to email. So essentially, if you're really on top and really push things, you should be able to reply within hours to investor emails, not doing this within days. So that's usually a small cue when you think about speed of execution. So that was kind of the number one and the top. Two is traction. You want to show to your investors that you're able to build in a very short time a lot of traction. So this could mean you have a longer waiting list. Of course, ideally you have some paid pilots already, if this is possible. If not, it's at least LOIs, or it's a long sales pipeline. Very important, this counts. If you, it's not only signed contracts, but if you can say to investors, hey, I am in conversation with 50 customers, I can tell you the names, I have now 10 bottom funnel communications, so we are closely aligning on an LOI or on a paid or unpaid pilot, and already three pilots are running. That's good customer traction. That's the second one. Third is domain expertise. So if you are working in particular in the B2B field and even more in the deep tech area, in particular biotech, for example, you need to show domain expertise. So I have a PhD in robotics, or at least a master. There is a professor in my team who really knows the stuff. I have co-authored scientific publications. I have industry experience in that domain, and I've built my domain expertise by working with other industry players. Yeah, this kind of domain expertise is really, really critical. If you have it, I would really show it very clearly to investors. Then four, product traction. So you show not only that you can sell, but as well that the product is improving. And for B2B SaaS, it's often possible to launch MVPs. For deep tech startups, of not possible. So then you need to show very clearly technical milestones. So what are the next 7-8 milestones over the next 18 months I will hit to showcase my next steps in my company building. And then finally, CEO sales skills. So you need one person, a CEO often, who can sell to investors and to customers in a very vivid, a very strong way. Yeah, these are five. When you talk to many investors, these are top five investment criteria.
Amazing. And what are the kind of, you know, investment criteria that investors tend to look at, but actually, you know, you came across that they're not so important in the team?
Yeah, in the team in particular, yeah? So it's a good question. What's not so important? Co-location was one which came up. So usually you would say a team need to be co-located, yeah? So in the same city in the early phase, in particular to build culture and a team around it. Mm-hmm. In our internal analysis and as well in the surveys we did, this was not top of mind of investors. I would always recommend to be co-located, particularly in the pre-seed seed phase, because it's extremely powerful to build a culture. But if you're not, it's probably okay, but then you just need to ensure that you are very regular on one in one place. I know some startups will say, okay, hey, we are remote first, but we do homecomings every 8 weeks where we spend a week together. Yeah, that's one thing.
Martin, what is what's one skill or habit that has been crucial to your success as an investor and mentor? And how do you continue to develop it?
So one key thing, what for me is extremely important, is spotting and assessing entrepreneurial talent at the right moment. Yeah. So it's often easy to spot the classical founder profiles. Yeah. So you worked in big tech before, you worked at an investment bank or McKinsey or BCG, whatever before. You have founded a startup already, possibly exited. Now you're doing the second. These are kind of the easy cases where then every investor jumps on them. More difficult are these cases where you see potential in the team, but the team has yet to prove it.
Right.
And I do believe we are very good at this. So there is a magic moment when essentially these companies are like raw eggs. It's very early, actually 6 months before you found the company to roughly 6 months after you founded the company. And then to really understand if someone has the potential, so certain smartness, the ability to be driven, resilience and perseverance, these kinds of things to really be able to push through many valleys of almost death. Yeah, that's often the key thing. Many companies see, many successful companies have seen near-death moments. Yeah. So, and to survive this near-death moments, essentially 50 people say no to you. And it's like you fall on the floor and then you need to get up every single time. That's something which is really key for this early, in the early phase.
Yeah. I recently had on the show Benedict from V-Squared Ventures. They actually invest in deep tech startups exclusively, and we were talking about the entrepreneurial value of death. We're actually, like, he was also talking about how to avoid this. Talking about deep tech startups, you know, they often struggle with longer development cycles and higher R&D costs. You talked about it a bit already, but maybe a bit more. How can early stage founders navigate this, you know, challenges? Deep tech early stage founders navigate these challenges effectively?
Yeah, so the good news first is there is a wave of deep tech startups coming in Europe now. Yeah, so if you do this, then you are riding a wave, which is always helpful in fundraising and building companies.
Right.
So that's totally good news. The kind of bad news is deep tech companies require more patient capital and more capital. So you need to find investors who essentially understand this. And you're not able to show results so quickly because your R&D risks, technology risks are higher, and there is a market risk often. So a couple of things which really counts, which are really important for deep tech founders. First, I would leverage all available grants. This is often a bit underdone in the early stage. So there's a lot of grants which you can get, both locally, so in particular, checking your, in Germany, it's your Bundesland, but essentially it's the municipal level, or the state level, not the federal level. Then there are some federal level grants, there are even some EU grants. So that's really leveraging the grants is one way of getting out of this. Yeah. There is a bit of a debate, as well as at deep tech investors, if you, and to what extent you should do this. I would say get as much grant money as possible while staying fast. Okay, so there is a bit of a risk if you get a lot of grants in, 1, 2, 3 million grants, that slows you down because you don't have the pressure to go out and really push your company fast enough. So I would try to get all the money you can get while keeping the speed. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. Then two, you just mentioned V-Squared is an extremely strong deep tech investors. Mm-hmm. You need to talk to them, V-Squared, IQ Capitals, Lake Stars, Warren Catalysts, the early birds. So essentially the deep tech funds that really understand the space. Mm-hmm. And some specialized investors as well. For example, if you're building a new space startup, Alpine Space, Bülent Altan, for example, build a really great fund. So really, there's Seraphim. So there are specialized investors on deep tech and in the specific deep tech verticals, which are really good. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I said this before, being clear on your technical milestones. Yeah, this is a thing I've seen very often that founders are not clear enough on this. You cannot push out an MVP like a B2B SaaS startup so well, right? So if you're building a fusion reactor, it's just not possible to push out an MVP in 6 months.
Exactly.
This is why you need to be very clear on your technical milestones. What will I do in 6 months? It's my kind of first test factory or lab case. Then I'm doing my first facility. I'm out of the lab. Getting certain certification, so be very clear on the so-called value inflection points, which you often prove with milestones. For example, an FDA approval would be such a value inflection point or a technical milestone. Being very clear here is a particular point.
Martin, when you're not building or chasing next unicorns, what's Martin Schilling all about?
Hey, I love developing. So I'm an entrepreneur by heart. Yeah. So I'm always trying to build stuff.
Yeah.
It's, you mentioned deep tech momentum. This is a topic very dear to my heart. So I've with our team built one of Europe's leading deep tech boot camps in Europe. That's an entrepreneur initiative, which I totally love, bringing together the best deep tech founders, investors, customers on one platform. I think these kind of things I really love doing. I love reflecting and creating content. That's a passion of mine. So as we have discussed this here a couple of minutes ago, after N26, really my second son was born during that time too. So then I took essentially a time off after N26 and reflected on the journey and written a book. I am now as well, I am currently considering writing a next book. When this will happen is not yet completely clear, but in particular around North Star and investments, that's a topic as well I'm very dear to my heart because I'm seeing many, many founders struggling with this. So in particular, developing content with actionable advice for founders, what can you do better next Monday to enable your entrepreneurial success is something very dear to my heart, apart from being husband and father.
Sounds good. Looking forward to the book. Martin, reflecting on your ventures, or let's call it adventures, what's one piece of advice you wish you'd received when you started your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah. Hey, there is a discussion how much power you should share as a founder. Yeah. Power in the sense how much degrees of control or governance you want to put around you. Mm-hmm. When I think back about my first startup, I, together with my co-founder, we banged our head against the same steel wall for 6 years. We did not change walls fast enough. And at one point, the head really hurts. Yeah. So one thing I would do differently is surrounding yourself with key critical industry advisors and have a very disciplined approach to get their feedback. So for example, there's always the possibility to create an advisory board. It's not a board in the narrow sense, it's an advisory board, more a bit loose, and then bringing them together at least 4 times a year and showing them your strategy and your North Star and then letting them reflect on this. That's really critical. I didn't do this enough in my first startup. Likely this would have helped us to, get external perspective on our North Star. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's certainly one. So if you keep too much power, there are some really great counterexamples. Yeah, Elon Musk would be one, Steve Jobs to a certain degree, maybe Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook or Meta now. So there are some examples where I say, yeah, but they really kept kind of control and built some massively successful companies, which is true. You can, of course, do it. But I would say often it helps, at least if you don't kind of have investors on board, which kind of build a governance structure around you, to from yourself do this and building this particular advisory boards and kind of governance structures.
Martin, before I let you go, I've been enjoying this interview a lot of good stuff coming out of it. You already mentioned that maybe you'll write the next book. Any other new projects or initiatives that you're excited about, either within TechStars or outside of it?
Hey, there's a theme maybe interesting to your listeners. We have seen an era in the last decades of globalization. Mm-hmm. The world interconnected far more. Supply chains got much tighter across the globe. We exchanged goods and services as well, connections and bonds. Unfortunately, the last years, we are now seeing a world that is moving away from this, a world that is deglobalizing. Make America great again would be, you know, an area, or of course the Chinese expansion policy. And now, of course, we in Europe say, hey, it's about European tech sovereignty. Yeah, right. So to make ourselves more independent, I am more and more convinced that despite our thinking around tech sovereignty, which is important, we need to be close to our friends and allies in the world. We need to honor and support these old alliances and maybe forging new ones. So I do very much believe in the transatlantic friendship. I'm based in Berlin. A couple of weeks ago, we had the anniversary of the Berlin Bridge, where the US essentially saved Berlin. With food and kind of throwing chocolates out of planes, etc. I do very much still believe that in this world where it seems like, look, US policy, it's not so easy from a European perspective, in particular in this time to connect to as well our friends from the US, for example, in the deep tech area, US deep tech investors, but as well entrepreneurs and maybe traveling there from time to time. Yeah. While as well building new friendships and new allies, for example, Southeast Asia or India, you know, there are new regions coming up where I do think, in particular, we in Europe need to create farther and stronger bonds. I think that's a very important theme, which I encourage us all to do, building these bonds, in particular in times of war, what we're seeing now in the Ukraine. And I would love to contribute to this. So, for example, that's why as well I'm organizing here Deep Tech Momentum and topics like this, because these are platforms to bring together people across international tech ecosystems that together can build a better world.
Amazing. Martin, thank you so much for the time that you spent with us. I wish you all the best. And this was an amazing episode. I really love talking to you. I hope to talk to you soon again and see you in Berlin or in Barcelona. Ciao.
Likewise. Thanks, Martin. Big pleasure. Thank you.